Welcome, everyone, to an emergency trade podcast of the NBA podcast. We're not planning on doing this today, but naturally, it's the trade deadline is a week from Thursday, so it is Woj bomb season, and Adrian Wojnarowski dropped a big one today. Serge Ibaka has been traded to the Toronto Raptors for Terrence Ross and a first-round pick, the worst of the Raptors or one owed from the Clippers. So, before we get in to talk about that, just a few brief reminders. You can find us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. Be sure to check us out there. Give us a follow. All three of our Twitter handles are in the bio, so give us a follow as well. You can find us on iTunes this year, so subscribe, download, and leave us some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year by FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. We have Zach Harper, formerly of CBS Sports, writing for us there. He's been giving us a lot of good trade deadline content in particular, so be sure to check out FanRag and FanRag NBA. Joining me for this emergency trade podcast is none other than Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, and might I add, it might be Giannis Antetokounmpo who's going to win MIP, but your plug game is off the chart.
Thank you. I try. Our third co-host, Sarah Chalea, could not make it because, frankly, she's too responsible to be able to podcast in the middle of a Tuesday. So let's get in right away and talk about this Ibaka deal. We should also mention, because this, frankly, influences how we will perceive this deal, before the Ibaka news broke, the Cleveland Cavaliers came out and announced that Kevin Love was undergoing a minor arthroscopic surgery on his knee. He's expected to be out for about 6 weeks, which puts his return, give or take, at the end of the regular season. So with that in mind, Mort, what do you think about the Raptors trading for Ibaka?
Oh, it couldn't be more perfectly timed, could it? I mean, before I start off with that, we need to give ourselves some props here because yes. All season long we've been arguing that Toronto needs a four, and the only way they're going to get him is by trade because they are capped out with Kyle Lowry hitting the free agent market next year. They just gave DeMar DeRozan $145 million, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So they needed to pull the plug on a deal, and they did. They got Serge. Then the Kevin Love news broke, I think, almost simultaneously. It felt like it. And now Toronto appears to have a little bit of an advantage going into the later stretch of the season. Brian, are you there where you want to put them up alongside Cleveland or just like a small notch below?
It's tough to say. I mean, lately, going into Tuesday before this trade happened, the Raptors had lost 10 of their last 14 games, so they had kind of hit a little bit of a tailspin. And Lowry and DeRozan in particular have been voicing the need for help in recent games. I couldn't find this quote this morning, but I swear I saw it on Twitter last week, where I think it was like Damari Carroll saying basically, especially in late game situations, our offense gets really stagnant. Like, we rely too heavily on Kyle and DeMar. So we, like the other three of us, kind of just stand in the corner and don't really expect to touch the ball that much. And that really has proven to be, especially in this recent downswing, that's really kind of come back to repeatedly haunt the Raptors. Like, they melted down the other day against the Detroit Pistons, and it was kind of the same story. So for that reason, we have to see. I think it's still too early to say the Raptors are like now the favorites to come out of the East, until we see what happens with Kevin Love. Like, if he comes back 100% and he's ready to go by the playoffs, I still give them the slight edge. That said, I'm with you. This is a move the Raptors had to make, and they had to make it now. I think the timing, especially doing it before the All-Star break, is brilliant because now you've got 10 days to get Ibaka worked into your system. I know, Lowry and DeRozan are going to be an All-Star game, but like, Ibaka now has more prep time to like become familiar with everything Toronto runs. So after the All-Star break, he hopefully hits the ground running, maybe even starts at the four right away. So for that reason, I mean, if I didn't already love the move, I love it even more for Toronto. Somewhat, it sounds like you are where I am, Toronto, clear number two in the East now, but not necessarily going to dethrone the Cavs.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am. Look, here's the thing. I like what Boston generally are doing, but they kind of needed the same kind of trade. They need to do something because they're sort of there, but not quite. They went out and spent all that money on Al Horford, and they are one piece away, like one legitimate piece away. Now, Toronto made their move. Mm-hmm. They more or less said to Boston, show me what you got.
Yeah.
Because now they have the upper hand, as far as I'm concerned. Like, okay, theoretically, everything could implode, but I doubt it because Serge is a damn professional.
Yeah,
and right. He is so good at knowing his limitations and knowing what he can and can't do out there. So I feel very confident in this group. And look, one thing we haven't discussed in prior episodes of the podcast is what if DeMarre Carroll begins to find his game?
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean,
he's been off.
Yeah, he's been, you know, he's been showing signs in recent weeks, I would say. Like, he's starting to round into form, it feels like. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, like, you know, with Ibaka's just such a perfect fit in that lineup, you know, for multiple reasons. One, Jonas Valanciunas is, you know, he's not a great shot blocker. He's averaging less than one block per game. So Ibaka can help there as a weak side rim protector, shot blocker, cover up kind of that deficiency of Valanciunas. If the Raptors want to go small, they can put Ibaka at the five, and hopefully they, you know, exploit that a little bit. Ibaka, like, Valanciunas also tends to operate mostly in the post. About around 75% of his shot attempts are coming within 10 feet of the basket. Ibaka, meanwhile, is averaging a career-high 1.5 threes per game, shooting nearly 40% from three, also a career-high. So he's going to give the Raptors some much-needed floor spacing. And I just wrote a recap, or it's a trade reaction to this at B-Ball Breakdown, so check that out later today when it goes up. But I've found this one thing where I really think, you know, this, above all else, is where Ibaka is going to help. So I looked at their clutch time metrics, which is when the Raptors are within 5 points, either ahead or behind, and then they're five or fewer minutes in a game. So Lowry and DeRozan have gone, I'm going to be sure I get this set exactly right. They've gone 72 of 160 in terms of field goal attempts and percentage, which is 45%, which is great. You know, that's really, you can't really ask for much more than that, especially from your two stars who are, you know, probably facing double teams a lot. The rest of the Raptors combined in clutch time situations this year, 20 of 64.
Yeah. When you told me that stat earlier, I was like blown away.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, you know, it's good in a sense, like that's smart of the Raptors to rely predominantly on their two top scorers in close game situations. You know, you don't want to have a Bulls situation where Paul Zipser is shooting a three and Jimmy Butler is going off after the game. Like, you got to earn that, man. You know, Fred VanVleet is not shooting like 15 attempts per game in clutch time situations. So that's good, but it also means you're super predictable, especially in a playoff series, you know, where teams have more, you could strategize more based on one opponent. So teams will, If the Raptors didn't make a move, the strategy would be, let's load up on Lowry and DeRozan. If it's close with 5 minutes left, let's make Terrence Ross beat us. Let's make Valanciunas beat us. Let's make Patrick Patterson beat us. With Ibaka, they don't have that option anymore. Or they do, but you know, Ibaka is capable of kind of coming through in those situations, you know. I think Ibaka...
Right, because he can stretch.
Right, exactly. Like, so in 2013-14, he went 13 of 25 in clutch situations, which is 52%. His final season in OKC, he was 14 of 27, which is 51.9%. So he's used to being, based on his time in OKC, he's used to being that third banana offensively. So it's not going to be like a huge role adjustment for him. Frankly, him going to Orlando was the big role adjustment. So he's going to slide right back into where he was in OKC as this nice complimentary scorer who can relieve pressure from some of your two big stars.
Right, but let's just hope that he doesn't fall into like the slump that he was in OKC like right. for the last 2 years. But I hear what you're saying. I agree. I think when you give the ball to Ibaka late in games, you have a certain advantage that you don't have if, say, Damari Carroll or Terrence Ross gets it.
Like, right.
Don't get me wrong, Ross can bomb from the outside, but he's not a 6'10 shooter.
Yeah.
Who can take people off the dribble. And that's like actually an underrated part of his game, Ibaka is. I don't have the numbers on it, mm-hmm. but he's actually pretty decent when he puts the ball on the floor. He has this sneaky first step, which I kind of hope that he utilizes a little bit more in Toronto, because that would free up some passes, some skip passes to Lowry on the outside and DeRozan. You know, this all comes back to DeRozan, though. Like, if he can't get that corner three ball to work for him, I mean, then an acquisition of Ibaka means dick.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah.
At least speaking in playoff ideology.
Right, yeah. And I mean, again, it's like, it depends on how healthy Kevin Love is. Like, if Kevin Love does not come back healthy, the East is, I'm safe. I feel good about declaring the East would be wide open at that point. Because,
oh, for sure.
You know, like that, the no team in the NBA was getting less from its power forward position, according to hoopstats.com. They were getting about, I think, 13 points per game, that's it, from the power forward, than Toronto. So now, you know, what was a weakness is now a strength. And if Love is out, like, now that's a big matchup problem for Cleveland against Toronto. Like, how do you cover Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka? Like, that, he's a legitimate number three, like, a legitimate number three on a championship-caliber team. So,
yeah.
I think it's safe to say we both love the acquisition. What do you think about the price that they paid for him? They gave up Terrence Ross and then, you know, what figures to be a pick in the 20s. We don't know exactly where.
So I'm going to separate it from the original deal.
Okay.
Because it doesn't work. I mean, I get the overall idea, but you have to look at each trade in a vacuum.
Sure.
And the value was fair because he was not going to re-sign.
Yeah.
Ibaka was. He was not going to re-sign with Orlando. So getting a first-round draft pick, and Terrence Ross was on a good deal, I should add.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy who was going to leave in 30 games anyway,
right?
That's actually a pretty good haul.
Yeah,
it's just because of the grander context of it all that, you know, Rob Hennigan looks pretty bad in this scenario. But ignoring that, he did well in just saving face. And also kudos to Rob Hennigan for two things: one, pulling the trigger, because that actually showed us he was more concerned about getting the product right than saving face.
Right.
By the way, that CC Bulls management.
Yeah, right. Right.
Like, really? That's, yeah, you could learn something. And also, he acknowledged that he was not really, I don't know if he acknowledged that he was on the hot seat. It sort of felt like it, but he basically said that criticism of his actions were warranted.
Hmm.
And that goes a long way to me.
Yeah.
It really does, because he has been on the hot seat. We've been crabbing on him forever, but right. I'm going to take some of that crap back, because that's the human aspect is pretty important, especially when it comes to fan interaction.
Yeah.
And he did well there. So I like the return. I also like the fact that they're going to slide Aaron Gordon back to the four now,
yes,
because you don't have Ibaka there. And here's an interesting wrinkle in all of this. Like, people were kind of laughing at the Terrence Ross acquisition, like, oh, Terrence Ross is a good building block, whatever. He actually indirectly is, because having a shooter of his caliber in the lineup next to Aaron Gordon frees up Aaron Gordon. So he becomes like an indirect building block in terms of how you can propel Gordon to higher standards of play.
Right. I completely agree with that. So I want to look at it first from Toronto's side and then the Magic. For Toronto, you know, it's a lot to give up for a guy who could leave in 3 months. Like, you
theoretically.
Right. So, like, you know, oftentimes you just don't give up that much for quote-unquote rental players. That said, one, presumably they checked with Ibaka before they made this trade. I would assume he expressed some interest of re-signing there. Steve Kyler of Basketball Insider cited sources a few days ago and said, you know, it's a good long-term fit for him. It was unclear if he would commit to re-signing to them. Maybe it's just a matter of, like, you know, seeing what's on the market. But you know, you have to figure, I think he shares an agent with Kyle Lowry too, so you have to figure.
And he has got a great relationship with Masai Ujiri, right?
Oh, does he?
I believe so. I know that Ujiri went after him for a while. Like, he's been targeting him for a long while.
Right.
And I do believe that they share some roots as well.
Gotcha.
There is something there, I believe, to have read at some point. Could have been fake news.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Well, regardless, here's the thing. Toronto was capped out. If you're going to re-sign Lowry, you don't have space to bring in a free agent like Ibaka. So then you have to consider this as basically like their big free agent move, you know, 4 or 5 months early. So with that in mind, right. I love it because, like, again, you're not going to get a player of Ibaka's caliber. So why not make this move? You know, you're like Kyle Lowry's going to be 31 in March. Damari Carroll turns 31 in July. DeMar DeRozan turns 28 in August. Like, you are the definition of a win now team. Like, your guys are not getting any younger. This is the type of move you make to fortify your core, give you a realistic shot of contending this year, next year, you know, the year after that, and then kind of recalibrate and see where you are. They are going to get, if they have to re-sign, you know, if they do re-sign Lowry and Ibaka, which I think is a safe assumption, they're going to be pretty deep into the luxury tax. But that said, again, they're going to be contending. It's not like Portland, who's in the luxury tax and is kind of, you know, spinning its wheels trying to figure out what it's doing. And we'll touch on Portland shortly. For the Magic, I think you said it well. If you view this deal independently, it's a great value because Ibaka was definitely going to leave in, you know, 30 games. And it's not like the Magic are contending for a playoff spot. You're totally right that it moves Gordon back to the four, which is where he should have been playing all along. you know, it's I agree. Hennigan deserves kudos for admitting his mistakes. We've said this on previous podcasts, how, you know, the worst thing a GM can do is make a mistake and then allow that to compound by not admitting his first mistake and like stubbornly clinging to the idea. Well, you know, I gave up so much for him. I have to try to re-sign him in July. And then if he goes, like, at least I tried. It's like, no, you know, you can read the tea leaves. He's going to leave. Get whatever you can in return for Ibaka. And Terrence Ross in a late first-round pick. You know, Terrence Ross is on the first year of a three-year, I think it's a $31.5 million deal. So he's young enough that he fits in developmentally with some of Orlando's other young players. You're probably not going to find, you know, a future All-Star at number 25, but you never know. Like, again,
it's a deep draft.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, you got it. You don't know, but if you don't get a swing at it, you definitely won't get one. So now Orlando will have its own pick, which probably figures to be somewhere in the top 5 to 7 range, where you probably are going to get a really good prospect, plus a late first rounder. So, you know, we'll see who, you know, those picks tend to lose value the second you turn them into an actual player, but we'll see what happens with that pick. But yeah, I think, you know, when you look at it, when you phrase it as they turned Victor Oladipo, Sabonis, and Ilyasova into Terrence Ross, the late first round pick.
Right.
That is like, then I want to just go hug a Magic fan. I just feel really, it's like, I'm really sorry, guys. Like, that sucks. But we were talking on the step back email thread today, and Chris Barnwell, who's a big Magic fan, was like, hey, well, at least this wasn't the worst trade Hennigan's made in the last couple of years. Like, at least we got a player and a pick back, unlike Tobias Harris, where we just salary dumped, or like unlike Mo Harkless, where we just got a top 55 protected second round pick. So, you know, they got something of value in return for Ibaka, which is good. So any last thoughts about this Ibaka deal, Mort, before we talk about Portland?
Well, not other than defensively speaking, Toronto should be greatly improved because I kind of like the idea of having Jonas just body up on the big fellas. He's not like a great defender, but he can handle his own one-on-one.
Sure.
And that could allow Ibaka to free roam a little bit.
Yeah.
His blocks have been down a lot. Ibaka's has.
Yep.
It's at 1.6 for the season. And this is a guy who used to swat like 3.5 per game.
Right.
So if that could be tuned up a little bit, because let's be honest, shot blockers who put up large numbers, like large shot blocking numbers, are just more inclined to scare the living poop out of opponents.
Right.
Like,
right.
Those numbers matter. Yeah. I mean, it just does. You know, of course, Ibaka still, he remains a great shot blocker, and I'm sure that one of the reasons that his shot blocking average right now is kind of low is because teams and players are like, oh, that's Ibaka, I'm just going to put up a floater instead.
Mm-hmm.
But if he has a chance, I want him to chase blocks, like, for the first 10 yeah. games with Toronto, just to get that average up, so going into the postseason, he's going to be like, look at those digits, you really want to come in here?
Right.
You should think twice.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a lot of pressure he can take off Jonas as well in terms of shot blocking, because, my lord, like, Toronto fans are really, really criticizing Jonas for his lack of blocks, which I get because he's long, athletic, and fairly quick. Like, he should get more than 0.8 a game or whatever it is.
Right.
So, but this should help matters in that regard. I'm really looking forward to this Toronto team. I'm kind of hyped about them. And also, we talked about this before we started shooting. Norman Powell. Wow, I butchered that name. I think with him being unleashed, uh-huh. that he could be a better player than Terrence Ross.
Yeah.
So this might actually be an acquisition of Ibaka as well as an addition by subtraction,
right.
due to Powell.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm really glad you brought up Powell, and we should have mentioned him earlier. I mean, yeah, it's like you don't need. There wasn't space for both Powell and Ross all that much, you know, because you have Lowry and DeRozan, you have Corey Joseph, so you really only need one more backcourt option, which, so Powell's emergence really kind of made Ross more expendable than he was even like a couple months ago. You know, Sean Devaney of Sporting News said, you know, 2 weeks back when he was the one who originally broke the, like, Ibaka is being shopped heavily news. And he mentioned Toronto as a destination, but he said they were reluctant to give up Terrence Ross. But then DeMar DeRozan got hurt, and Norman Powell played really well in his absence. So maybe that kind of convinced them, like, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll survive if we have Powell instead of Ross, especially if we're adding Serge Ibaka in place of, like, Patrick Patterson and Jared Sullinger. So,
yeah,
I'm with you. I'm super excited for Toronto now. I think, if nothing else, this will make the Eastern Conference playoffs better. You know, because the Wizards are playing really well. Like, that, the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, if the four favorites emerge, if it's Cleveland, Boston, Toronto, and Washington, like, that could be really fun.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. To think that they didn't have to give up Corey Joseph.
I know, it's insane.
I mean,
we should mention, so Josh Lewenberg of TSN. I think, yeah, TSN Sports.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, he reported after this trade that the Raptors tried to trade for Ibaka ahead of last summer's draft, which was when he was still on OKC. The Thunder's asking price was Corey Joseph, Patrick Patterson, Norman Powell, and Toronto's 9th overall pick. So,
yeah.
There's that.
You just have to wait for things to go through Orlando first, I suppose.
Right, exactly. You just have to pray someone more desperate to make the playoffs acquires him, and then realizes it didn't help, and then fire sales him for 40 cents on the dollar. So, yeah, once again, I think the moral of the story is Masai Ujiri stays winning, always and forever.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk briefly. This is not the only trade. Unfortunately, the Jahlil Okafor trade we are still waiting on. This is day 9 of the, hey guys, we're super serious, he's really going to get traded today.
I'm super serial, you guys.
I know. I'm pretty sure, side note before we get into this other one, I'm pretty sure Brian Colangelo is now leaking this every day. Like, no, wait, we're really serious. Like, he's definitely going to get moved today to drive up the, like, a bidding war. And then other teams are like, shut up. This is not, we don't believe you. Like, we're not changing our offer. And he's like, no, but we're really going to move him today. I promise. We're definitely going to move him. So, yeah, I'm expecting, at this point, I don't think Okafor is getting moved until after the All-Star break. I would be happy to be wrong, and we will definitely film another emergency podcast if he goes to the Bulls, especially.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that one.
Sure.
Look, I'm just imagining Brian Colangelo, like, drawn in South Park form, walking right. around, in like, playing... was it Al Gore?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, just, I'm super serial, guys. Yeah.
He definitely...
Man Bear Pig is every minute now.
Right, he definitely believes in Man Bear Pig.
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry for that side note. Let's go to the other big trade that happened the last couple days. I think this was on Sunday it broke that Portland was trading Mason Plumlee and a 2018 second round pick to the Denver Nuggets for Jusuf Nurkić and Memphis's top five protected first round pick in 2017. Which is going to convey. It'll be somewhere in the 20 range. So
basically the same deal as you just got Serge Ibaka for.
Yeah. You're not
just
wrong.
With the inclusion of a second round pick.
Right. Yeah. That's a fair point. Yeah. So Mort, what did you think of this deal? Do you think any either team came out as a clear winner or loser of that one?
Well, here's the thing. Denver has accumulated so many draft picks recently, and now they're trying to cash in a little bit. I don't know if Plumlee is the guy to go for.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I started looking at Nikola Jokic for a little bit because he's been balling.
Yes.
And I recognized something, and one of my Danish friends, who's a professional player, actually, he had a good point about something, and I want to reiterate his point.
Okay.
It's that Denver has recognized that Emmanuel Mudiay is not going to be this low turnover playmaking guy.
Yeah.
So what they have decided to do is essentially let the playmaking be done by players who are better at playmaking. That's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did, instead of overutilizing Jokic, now they get Mason Plumlee, who's a fine passer, who's a very fine passer, and is something that we don't speak enough of. He's so underrated in that aspect. So you put Plumlee on the block because he can only score very close to the basket. He's not a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you have Plumlee near the basket. You have Jokic, and I don't think that those two are going to play a hell of a lot of minutes together because that's a pretty slow lineup.
Right.
But I do think we'll see it.
Yeah.
So you have Plumlee in the post, you have Jokic in the high post or outside the three-point line,
mm-hmm.
and then you have Mudiay cutting.
Yeah.
Because those two will find angles for him and get him layups. He's extremely athletic, so he can get to the rim. He's just not a ball handler. He's not this on-ball point guard.
Mm-hmm.
So Denver just more or less outsourced their playmaking to Mason Plumlee and Nikola Jokic.
Right.
I expect them to give the ball much less to Mudiay from here on out and use him a lot more off the ball. If that works, then I love it for Denver.
Yeah.
I am concerned, again, as I said, whether giving up that draft pick for Plumlee specifically is the right move, mm-hmm. but I love the idea of it.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I'm with you. I wrote something about this for the Step Back, and I kind of think both teams, based on their respective needs, came out as winners. So for Portland, you know, they spent all of this money. They made it raid like it was Allen Iverson at a strip club, basically.
Allen Iverson at a TGI Friday.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And now, you know, Mason Plumlee is a restricted free agent this summer. They're already, even without Plumlee, projected to be in the luxury tax. So if he got, you know, a $10 million a year deal, which is very low. I think he's going to get more than that. It would put an exorbitant financial strain on Portland, and they're not anywhere near the caliber of team that should be making those types of moves. So it was a nice proactive move for Portland's sake to say, hey, we know we probably can't retain this guy. Let's take a flyer on Jusuf Nurkić, who has fallen out of favor in Denver. You know, might provide a different look defensively in particular. Portland was 20th last year and now 27th this year in defensive efficiency. Not all of that is on Plumlee. You know, when you're building around Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, that's hard to have a top 10 defense. But
yeah,
Plumlee, you know, I don't think you can say he is an above average defender. I think average would be putting it nicely.
That's fair.
Yeah. So I like it for Portland just being proactive, getting a first-round pick, getting Nurkić, seeing if he can be motivated when he's not competing with Jokic for minutes. For Denver, I think you are right on the money. You know, they're basically running their offense through Jokic already. Like, he had a triple-double against the Warriors on Monday night.
Oh, my God, how great was that?
Oh, God. So I have him in a fantasy basketball keeper league. I got him in, like, the sixth round this year, and I'm never letting him go. him and Russell Westbrook and Kristaps Porzingis. I was kind of torn because I also have Rudy Gobert and I can only keep three guys. But now Jokic, there's no way I'm going to go to the grave. You'll have to bury me with like trading cards of Russell Westbrook and Nikola Jokic based on how much money they make me in the next couple of years.
I'm going to put you in hell right now.
Yeah. Don't do
if
that.
If Denver called and offered Jokic for Embiid, would you do it?
No, only because I love Embiid so much, but I know it's
stupid. Yeah, but you're not allowed to be a homer right
now. Yeah, I would have to see his MRI. That's all I could say. I would have to see how serious this meniscus nonsense is, which we could talk about.
Well, all right, but Jokic still is cost control for another 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, Embiid is a better two-way prospect. It's just the health that concerns me.
Yeah, well, but that's a big thing.
Right, though. Yeah.
And Jokic is like, he's going to be an all-star for years and years and years and years.
That's tough. That's a legitimately tough. I don't know. We should ask Sarah on our next episode.
We should also bring this out to the Sixers community because I want to hear this.
Yeah, okay. I could float that out after this episode. But yeah, for Denver, I think you're just right on that. You know, Plumlee is they can now run their offense through their centers 48 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Plumlee is fifth in the league in terms of all centers in assist percentage and assists per game. So you're again spot on in saying he's a very underrated passer and was really helping Portland out a great deal on offense. So I'm excited to see what happens there. I'm with you. I don't think they play Plumlee and Jokic together all that much. That said, they went through the Jokic combination earlier this season, and then they like moved Jokic to the bench, and they were kind of featuring Nurkic early, which was just like, what the hell are you doing? You have this like all-star caliber talent. Why are you wasting it on Nurkic? And then they in mid-December they switched and Jokic took off. So I think, you know, whatever they do from this point forward, they're going to it's not going to come at Jokic's expense if the Plumlee thing doesn't work out. So it goes, they're not going to force that. I think it's hard to say who wins this deal until we see what happens with Plumlee in restricted free agency. If a team goes after him with a huge amount and he signs, an $18 million a year offer sheet and Denver is forced to match, they have the cap space right now, but like long term, especially if Jokic and Plumlee don't prove to be a great fit together, right. There's not much sense in committing that much money to a backup center. So you got to figure if it doesn't work out, they'll re-sign him only to move him later, which is kind of what I want the Sixers to do with Nerlens Noel, as a side note.
And which is something Denver has done before with Nene.
Yeah, that's true. Right. So it's, wasn't that with our boy Masai at the helm?
That was Masai. Yep. Yeah, he re-signed Nene and then traded him for JaVale McGee, making... We talked about Ibaka being like a 4 to 5 month earlier free agent signing.
Right.
That was essential. That was just a delayed free agent signing. Like they re-signed Nene and then traded him later on in the season for JaVale McGee, who then became Denver's indirect free agent acquisition.
Correct.
It's actually a smart way of doing things. I don't understand why more teams aren't really inclined to do it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think it's... I believe if a restricted free agent signs an offer sheet and then you match, they have trade veto rights for a year, but it's only a year. And realistically, you're probably signing these guys for 4 years anyway.
So, right, Nene was a vet. That's right.
So,
that's fair.
But
that's a fair point.
That said, I mean, that won't preclude Denver from trading Plumlee in the future if, for whatever reason, it doesn't work out and they do re-sign him, or I think that's only if they match an offer sheet. If they just sign him outright, they can trade him whenever, 3 months down the line, whenever. I could see it working out for both sides for their respective reasons. I think, it's pretty clear it's going to help Denver in the short term, probably will not do great things for Portland. So, Denver and Portland are locked in that like eighth seed of the West battle, which is just like a factory of sadness, but Denver is probably takes another step forward. Dallas and New Orleans are probably their top challengers now, and Portland, you got to figure, is preparing for a lottery pick. But it's not such a bad thing in this draft.
No. Like, imagine if Portland actually got a big man. Yeah. Like, I was on the search Ibaka to Portland idea earlier this season. Right. I was really banging the Allen Crabb for Serge Ibaka drum.
Yeah, you were.
And to my credit, that was similar value.
Yeah.
Like Terrence Ross in the first rounder. Yeah, so
that's true.
I was close.
Yeah.
But like, if Portland gets like a legitimate big man in this year's draft,
yeah,
hell, I'll take that instead of like 28 games of Ibaka, who might leave anyway.
I know. I don't know if they're going to get high enough to get him without, you know, hitting like the jackpot, in which case they're probably not going to take him. But Jonathan Isaac of Florida State seems like,
yeah,
he'd be a really fun fit there.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit.
Yeah.
He's gonna go higher. I was thinking like TJ Leaf or something.
Okay, yeah, that'd be fun. I mean, yeah,
he's not like a traditional big man in that sense, but, you know, he's athletic and can run the floor. He gives them a little bit of an offensive punch. That would be good.
And the good thing for Portland is that a lot of the top 10 projected picks right now are mostly point guards. You have Malik Monk, who's a shooting guard. You have a couple bigs, but it's like pretty guard heavy. And so, like, there's a chance that a big man, you know, if teams don't stick to best player available and go for need instead of talent, there's a chance a top 10 talent falls to them wherever they wind up. And they could wind up in, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th spot.
Ivan Rabb.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
If Ivan Rabb drops, Brian.
There you go. See? Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. When you're right, you're right.
Yeah. Portland, I really do like the move for both sides. I think it's like smart of both teams to realize where they are. You know, like, it's the same thing with Ibaka, like giving up a first round pick and Nurkic for 3 months rental of Plumlee seems like a lot, but like Nurkic was not playing, right? Like Nurkic was completely out of the rotation and he was sulking on the bench. So if you're getting a backup setter who allows you to play the same way for 48 minutes a game, that's a big win. Like, you can't count Nurkic as a plus asset. You're basically trading that pick, that Memphis pick, which could be like number 20 for Plumlee, which seems like a pretty fair value. So kudos to both teams. And I'm excited, especially after, you know, All-Star break and trade deadline, to kind of see all of these new pieces in action.
Oh, speaking of All-Star.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we were talking about who should replace
Kevin Love. Oh, yes. Yeah, right. Did they...
And, like, if Joel Embiid was healthy and had more games under his belt, that would have been great, but he isn't and he hasn't, so that's kind of unfortunate. So I'm kind of leaning Porzingis.
Yeah, I think that's 100% the right call. If anything, it might just be Adam Silver's way of being like, hey, Knicks, I know you are just a toxic waste of dysfunction, but you have one good thing going for you. Do not screw that up. Here is Kristaps. He's an all-star. You know, he'll be fun. I just hope that, you know, he's over that Achilles soreness that he was dealing with earlier this year, and that, you know, playing in the All-Star game would not exacerbate, like, you know, if it's better for him to get 8 days of rest to be ready for the second half of this dumpster fire season, go for that. But I can't honestly think of another deserving, you know, another Eastern Conference snub. Like, the big snubs to me were in the West, aside from Embiid, so...
And that's why we should change the All-Star format. Like, we should allow Nikola Jokic to take that place.
Oh, that would be fun. Well,
you know what I mean? Like, it's so tough. Like, look, Damian Lillard isn't even in the game.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, but I'm looking at those teams and I'm like, there are so many guys out West who definitely would have been there if they were East. Like, we should do something about this.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like the format they have in the rookie game.
The U.S. versus the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, the, right. That's what it's become. But back in the day when they were like rookies and sophomores or whatever, they had like, you could have like two Nets guys on one squad and two Nets guys on the other squad. So whatever. Like, if you should just mix it up. You should make it like a a pool.
Yeah. Or something like that. It would be cool if you could just vote on like 24 guys and then there are team captains and they can like draft their own teams to see it. Especially because that could be fun. Like if, you know, if one of the Golden State Warriors guys was the captain, would they pick Russell Westbrook or would they be like, no, you could have him. Right? Yeah.
Like putting players in charge would be so much fun. You have like Kevon Looney getting into the game.
Yeah. No, but like we would still vote on the pool of players that were qualified to come in, and then
that's a good idea.
Yeah, and then like the players themselves are like team captains. However you choose those, maybe like the top two vote getters are the team captains, and they pick from there.
Yeah, I would love that.
There you go. We started off with a trade pod, and we ended with a way to make
changing the All Star format.
Yeah, a way to make the All Star game better. All right, well, Mort, any final thoughts on either Ibaka or this Portland-Denver deal?
Well, not really. I think you covered most of it. I'll just say this. We've actually gotten down, like as an NBA community, we've gotten a little bit down on Nurkic, and I think we might be making a mistake in doing that. I know he's limited on a whole bunch of stuff, but he's young. Mm-hmm. And he's got this offensive sense that a lot of bigs don't have. Like, he can step out a little bit. He's got a little bit of moxie in him. He's got some ugliness in him. If he's given enough rein, I could actually see him become quite a stable offensive player who could really, really be a difference maker, offensively speaking. Mm-hmm. And he would need to get a little bit more range on that jump shot, though. That is really the problem, isn't it, in today's world?
Yeah.
Like, you have some of the most offensively adept bigs, but if they can't hit a jump shot, like you're out. You can't do anything. You're limited.
Yeah. Yeah. I think talent wise, I'm not out on Nurkic. I think it just seems like he got so frustrated. He was like so in his head that once he fell out of the rotation, you know, it's like tricky to manage him. But if he can find the right fit in Portland and he's not gonna have to compete with minutes, you know, Azili's probably out for the year. You know, I don't think Ed Davis or Noah Vonleh present a huge threat to him in terms of minutes. So
there's a bust in Noah Vonleh we haven't even talked about.
So for that reason, I love it for Portland because I think, you know, he's going to get 30-plus minutes a game. He's going to feel comfortable in his role. He was playing really well at the start of the year. Like, he was outplaying Jokic at the start of the year, and that's why Malone kept him in the starting lineup. But then, you know, Jokic kind of took off and Nurkic slumped. But like for those first five games, Nurkic was playing really well, and coming into the year, Mike Malone was talking about like how high he was on Nurkic and how he thought he was going to have a big year. So like, yeah, I think you're totally right. We should not be out on Nurkic being a legitimate rotation player or a possible piece of the future in Portland.
Yeah, I mean, he's got good numbers. Like, if you look at his career, he's averaging like 7.5 points and 6 rebounds and a block in under 18 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is good per minute production. Even if he becomes like one of those Greg Monroe backups who gets like 23, 25 minutes a game off the bench, like comes in as an offensive-minded big, that'd be fine for him. He could squeeze out like 14 and 8 in those minutes.
Yeah. I mean, hell, look at what Monroe's been doing since Jabari went down. Like, he's having a monster game the other day.
Yeah, he's having fun.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right. Mort, it was good talking to you. Just a reminder to everyone, again, follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find all three of our Twitter handles in there as well. Check out FanRag Sports and at FanRag NBA on Twitter, which is where we're being hosted this year. We're going to have a lot of good trade deadline content. If you're into fantasy basketball, I've been doing fantasy stuff for them all year, and I'll be writing some reaction to this Ibaka deal for tomorrow. And again, follow us on iTunes, subscribe, download, leave us some reviews. We'd love to hear any feedback you have. Mort, hopefully we will be back in a couple days to react to some Jahlil Okafor trade. a solidified Jahlil Okafor trade.
Leave a little something for me because I have put a lot of money in a special project that you know of.
That's
for the for the trade deadline. Not for Americans, though, only for Danes, but still. I am hoping for my own benefit that we don't have any more trades before that night because,
The Magic really ruins some of the suspense for you here. But, don't worry. As I alluded to earlier on this podcast, I certainly am starting to fear that Jahlil Okafor will be on the Sixers as of 2 p.m. on February 23rd. And what happens in that last hour will go a long way toward whether I can stay sober for the rest of the year or if I can't. So until then, Mort, we'll catch you in a couple days.
Definitely, Brian. Later.
All right, take care.
You too, man.